Hey guys, and welcome back to Tea with the Queen. My name is Tracy Maloney, aka the Legal Queen on social media. What you are about to hear is a live recording from my Discord show. I go live each Wednesday and Friday, 12:30 to 1:30, and people call in with problems they're having or questions they may have about a family law application, whether that's divorce, finances, or children. So on to the first caller.
So I've got a question on Instagram from Tracy Stewart. Sorry, Tracy, just as I saw it, you popped up there. Can you put your financial order in place while you were in the process of separating? Absolutely you can. And I encourage anybody that has separated to start thinking about the finances, because this can take the longest part of time. You know, sometimes we can be negotiating finances for 6 months or even a year. So start to think about who's getting what. Start to put agreements in place. Don't necessarily do anything about it. Maybe don't action anything like selling properties and dividing the equity until you've got the order in place. But by all means, start to do it the minute that you know the marriage has broken down irretrievably. The other thing that I would add to that, I had a question last week from a couple that weren't married. And the lady said, so I want to get my financial order in place. If you're not married, you can't get a financial order. It only applies to couples that were married and are getting a divorce. So I hope that helps, guys. Okay, Support 25, you have your hand up. I've invited you onto the stage. There we go. What's your question?
Hi, thank you for letting me come in and ask a question.
That's fine.
My question is about, it's been 3 years, I'm in the financial remedies.
Yeah.
Ex-husband is not disclosing everything what he's supposed to. And I'm litigation in person.
Yes.
Now he left the UK purposely so he don't have to pay the child maintenance.
Yes.
And he's disposed lots of his... properties in India.
Yeah.
And now my question is how to make this one clean break or not a clean break, because I feel he's hiding lots of properties and everything, and I'm just wasting my money in the paperwork and all, and paying sometime people to do it, sometime I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And he's not even following any court orders. And to be honest, I'm getting an impression that UK court is not that strict. He is all the time breaching the court order. For example, we have occupation order where he need to pay 50% house mortgage. He's not paying it since November 2023. Then we have financial disclosure enforcement. He didn't do that one as well. So I just want to know what happened in these cases when the other partner is very complicated like this.
Okay, so lots of questions in there. Your first question me, no, it's fine. Your first question to me was, should this be a clean break or should I be going for just a financial order? I wouldn't be able to answer that because that's advice, okay? So what you're saying is, which order best suits me? I wouldn't be able to give you that advice without knowing more about your case. However, because you then went on to tell me about other assets that he has, then chances are a clean break isn't going to work for you because there seems to be other assets in the marriage that need to be divided. The other thing you mentioned is that you already have an order in place whereby he's meant to pay the mortgage and hasn't been since November. Know that if he isn't engaging with the process, the court can still conclude your matter by making an order in his absence. And this is where I think you need the advice, because the advice might be that you, for example, keep the property, all of the equity that's in it, or something else, and thereafter have a clean break. Because what we do know, even from the short information that you've told me, is that he's absconded, that he's not engaging with the process, and chances are any order that's made in terms of spousal maintenance or child maintenance, he's not going to adhere to. So it may be that you need to go back to the drawing board, think about a plan B, this is what's going to suit me financially, then go to court and ask for it. But that's as far as I can take your question, really, because you really do need advice from this point in. But does that help?
Thank you so much. Yeah. It is like there is a hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And you will get to the finish line because, as I say, the court does have the power to make orders in his absence. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay. Right, next on my list is ABZ. Whenever you're ready, ask me your question.
Hi, Tracy. So basically, the court had previously set a final order where I see my daughter once a month in Manchester. I've seen her there, and I remember speaking to you last month.
Yeah, that's right. I remember.
I did see my daughter then. She messaged me about 15 minutes before the contact and said she changed her mind, as you suggested, that she might do. And she did do that. And I was there at that time to pick up my daughter. She only gave me a 5-minute window. Since then, communication has broken down quite rapidly. We were using a parenting app, and she's decided to come off the parenting app and revert back to email. Now, in the court order, it said that we were to use the parenting app and all that sort of stuff. She's reverted back to email. I don't understand why, because everything in the parenting app is actually recorded and nothing can be deleted. The court order also states that she needs to initiate FaceTime with me and my daughter, once a week.
Yeah.
It's been about 10 days. I emailed her because she said she's coming off the app. I can't see that she's any issues online anytime.
Yeah.
Can't see messages being sent through or anything like that. I emailed her about 3-4 days ago, maybe, and requested video calls, etc. And she hasn't emailed me back. Now, it's been about 10 days, so over a week. I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt that she hasn't seen my email, but what else, what would I do in that scenario?
And I remember when you came on before, I'd said to you, look, you're in a difficult position because she hasn't actually breached the order yet, so you almost have to go through the pain of traveling across to Manchester, have her not turn up, which is what you've done, and now she's breached it. Okay. So if you were my client, the first thing I would do is write to her to say why. You know, what are the reasons that you felt that my client couldn't have contact with the child, given that the order says that he can and given that he has travelled, deliberately to see the child? If there wasn't a satisfactory response received, then I'd be taking it back to court to enforce the order, but this time I'd be saying to the court, we need a penal notice attached. Because the thing is, you're not just driving around the corner to have contact, which then she's not showing up for. You are coming across the water. It's a big old journey to then have to turn on your heel and go back again. And I think that there has to be consequences if there is no good reason. And when I say good reason, if she had welfare concerns, then they would be communicated to you way ahead of time. If the child was ill, she knows where you're coming from. She would have at least let you know the night before or very early on in that morning before you left to start your journey. Do you know what I mean? So all of this would need to be demonstrated to the court, because what's happening is it's destructing or continuing to destruct the co-parenting relationship, which isn't good for your daughter. So that's the steps that I'd be taking. A letter first, asking specifically for her to reply to and explain why the child wasn't made available for contact. Failing that, going back to court, but asking for a penal notice to be attached.
Okay, yeah, well, that makes sense. Do you think I should give it another week that she actually breaches the order?
No.
Doesn't allow me to see my daughter for her.
No, and the reason I say no is because she has come off the parenting app. So again, she's making it near on impossible for you to get in touch with her. Do you know what I mean? The parenting app's been set up. She's deliberately come off. You know, if we have a good co-parenting relationship, there may be a reason why we have to come off the co-parenting app, but we let the other parent know. You know, now that you are sort of hanging around and waiting for her to get back in touch, I would be sending the letter out. And if you haven't heard within 7 days, I'd be making an application to the court for breach to enforce.
Okay.
All right.
Do you think at this point she would actually be, if I was to take it back to court, that the court would be like, right, you're in breach of the order, and you know, she may get some sort of financial penalty or at this point for breaching the order?
She wouldn't right now, because you don't have a penal notice on your existing order. However, you know, you could simply say to the court, look, I want my costs paid back, my travel costs. That's for the judge's discretion then, whether or not they order that for you. But moving forward, that's why you would be asking for the penal notice to be attached. And your case is slightly different because you are coming so far. You are travelling so far on this that I think the court needs to be made aware sooner rather than later as to what's actually going on here.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Perfect. Lovely.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. M48338. How can I help?
Hi, I was just wondering if you could help me a little bit. So I have a financial order.
Yes.
That was made in the court.
Yeah.
In that order, it said that they had to, my ex had to pay a lump sum, and we had to transfer the property to their name.
Yes.
They had 56 days to do that. They didn't do it, so I sent a letter to the solicitor asking if there was any reason. I tried to get in contact with them and I've been ignored. So I've popped over a D11 form to the court.
Yeah.
But we have, me and my new partner are currently in the process of buying a house. But this is all, there was a lot of debt left from the last marriage. So I need all the debt to be paid off before I get that house, but I've been paying the solicitors and stuff for that. And now with this going on, obviously it's going to put a stop to all this because we don't know when we're going to get the money. We don't know when any of that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, so I'm just wondering how long the process, just wondering how long the process would take, because we're supposed to be closing on this new house like next month, the month after.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the order allows for 56 days. So whenever the order was made or the solicitors drafted it, that was considered a sufficient amount of time for those tasks to be completed. Given that that has passed, then, you know, they are in breach of that order. I mean, you've got two things going on here, really. You've got the breach of the order, but you've also got some financial advice that's needed as to how you can sort of keep all those plates spinning until such times as you have the financial order executed, because as you say, you're trying to pay the debt, you're trying to pay the solicitor's fees. I think that if something's been breached and the other side aren't communicating and being transparent about why the breach has happened, you have no alternative but to take it back to court. And it might be that you need to ask the court for an emergency hearing, really, because you've got debt, you've got a house that's due to complete, and you've got an order that's being breached. And it might be that you say to the court, look, I only need 30 minutes, but I need it sort of within a week or two. You know, I can't be hanging on for a month because this really is serious and we need to address this. So if there's no communication or response coming from the other side to explain the breach, then you'll have to take it back to court.
So I've sent the D11 form off yesterday after waiting a substantial amount of time.
Yeah.
So is there any way, would I have to phone the court to get an emergency hearing once heard back from that?
You would normally on the D11, it will say, how urgent is this hearing? How quickly do you need it to be heard? So you would complete that information in there. If you've already sent it in, don't worry. Send the court an accompanying email or a letter explaining, look, I've sent the D11 in, but I actually do need this to be heard in the next 4 or 5 days.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. It's just so stressful because of the other house. I didn't want that to completely stop.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I understand. All right. Well, I hope that's helped.
Perfect. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Couple of questions from the TikTok. One that keeps being asked, can we both use the same solicitor? No, you can't. Where we're doing divorce and finances or even children, you have to have your own solicitors. It's a conflict of interest for me and other family law solicitors to act for both of you. Because obviously we're giving you bespoke advice as to what it is that you need, and we can't do that to two people at the same time. And the second question that I saw pop up is, how much does a consent order cost? If you're asking me how much is the court fee when you send it in, it's £58. And again, remember, if you're on a low income, you can fill out the EX164. Okay, next with their hand up is RT84. So whenever you are ready, there we go.
Hello, hi. We haven't exactly filed for divorce yet, but we've been having discussions because of the relationship breakdown, and the discussions go from being fairly amicable to much less so. How would somebody go about protecting themselves from false allegations that their partner might be threatening to use them against them for getting their way on things?
Evidence is key. Evidence. I mean, I don't know what allegations you're referring to, and I'm not encouraging you to tell me unless you feel comfortable telling me, but evidence. You have to be able to support with sufficient evidence that actually what they're saying is false, depending on what those allegations are, of course.
Okay. At the moment, it's coming down to basically, if you don't agree to this before we start the process, I can say this and that against you. I'm not going to go into them.
That's fine.
There's two quite serious things that they've mentioned.
So the other thing I would say is, again, I don't know if you're talking about a financial dispute or children's proceedings.
I think this will factor into both.
Okay. If we're talking, and I'm just reading between the lines, so if we're talking about financial proceedings and the allegations are one of conduct, that won't affect the financial proceedings, okay?
No, those allegations are,
you don't have to say if you'd rather not, and I'm happy for you not to say. I just wanted to say for you and for anyone else that's listening, conduct doesn't come into a financial remedy.
Mm-hmm.
But it may come into a children's remedy if that conduct impacts the children. So let me give you a better example. Sometimes we have couples where there has been domestic violence experienced between them. So wife is hitting or girlfriend is hitting boyfriend or boyfriend is hitting girlfriend. And whilst there are domestic violence allegations made, it doesn't always have an impact on the children, because actually the children have never been at risk of that. You know, once the couple separate, the domestic violence fades away. Or let's say we have allegations of drug misuse or overconsumption of alcohol. Again, if the contact is in a supervised environment, or the person who is being alleged of this provides some hair strands drug testing or alcohol testing, then we can just annihilate that and we can go on to have contact.
Okay, and it's more around being accused of psychological.
Okay, so then we are looking for our medical evidence. So then we're looking for any sort of GP support that we can get. If the allegations are really serious, there are times where we will get some psych testing done, and we'll submit a report to say, actually, the condition that we admit to still doesn't mean that the children are at any harm or that we are entitled to any less of the finances. So evidence will always help you in most of the scenarios where allegations are made.
Okay, and is there, from a professional reputation point of view, for me in work, is there, I'm guessing these accusations can be made and there's not really any way to sort of protect that from...
I think that kind of crosses over into employment law. So if somebody makes an allegation to your employer, and again, I don't practice employment law, but your employer is duty bound to investigate those if they choose to. And obviously, in that investigation, you would also have an opportunity to prevent evidence to counter that if you felt that actually, you know, I am still able to perform my job. So, okay. You know, and if the employer doesn't give you that opportunity and simply takes the allegations on face value and acts upon those to your detriment, that's where you'd seek advice from an employment lawyer.
Okay, and from a, if the false allegations being made, is there any issues for the part that the partner?
Yeah, yeah. So you're talking slander. Yeah, is that what you mean? Sort of, you know, yes, sort of, yeah, penalise them. Not really. Well, again, it depends on the allegations that they're making. It's hard for me to answer. Okay. Because if there's any truth to the allegations, then it's not slanderous. Do you see what I'm saying?
Understood.
So, again, you'd have to weigh up, you know, are these completely baseless and false allegations? In which case, you know, that's potentially a criminal action, or is there some truth to it, and would I then succeed if I was to take them to court for slander?
Okay.
All right.
And the threat of using that against to get maybe a higher amicable financial agreement, that would be considered.
So conduct doesn't come into finances. So if somebody is raising allegations of an unstable mental health, and I'm just generalising here, mm-hmm. that wouldn't be considered detrimental to you in finances. In fact, depending on what the allegations are made, it might work to your advantage. Because if what they're saying means that you are unable to work, well, then that might result in you having more of the matrimonial assets. So again, I'm skirting around the issues because I can't pinpoint it, and I hope that, you know, some of this is applying to you. But conduct won't be considered in a financial remedy case. Okay.
Okay. So in mediation, if they've said, okay, I want 100% of the property, and if you don't agree to it, I'm gonna make this allegation that.
Well, that's blackmail for a start.
Right. Okay.
And also, more importantly, there's every chance that no court's going to allow 100% to go to one of the parties, because the principle that the family court work on is one of fair and reasonable. So if that outcome is not fair and reasonable, even if you succumbed to the blackmail, there's every chance the court's not going to make that order.
Okay, that's good to know.
All right, I hope that helps.
Yeah, thank you.
Pleasure. Cheers. Thank you. Bye-bye. Next with their hand up is 285020. Oh, proud dad, I did invite you up to the stage. I think you might have dropped out. I'll invite you back up again. But I'm going to invite Captain as well because I can see you've got your hand up.
So this is proud dad's question.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
I have full custody of my kids and the judge has ignored what CAFCAS requested, and the children's wishes and feelings were ignored as there was DV and homophobic abuse,
yeah,
and sexuals having contact with their mum supervised.
Yeah.
Is it open and stresses the kids every time, but the judge says it needs to continue? There's no question there. I'm sorry.
Well, I suppose what my answer would be anyway is that if the court and CAFCAS are aware of the concerns and the court and CAFCAS have chosen to move forward, then the case hasn't been made out. So the concerns weren't given enough merit to be able to be taken seriously. So, you know, whilst the person who's made the concerns or raised the concerns is feeling slightly aggrieved, that's the court's decision. They haven't made their case out, is what I would say to that.
Okay. I'm not sure if you can answer this, Tracy, but I'm going to ask anyway.
Okay.
So, this is a question for someone who's in the audience.
Yeah.
Saying that their sister had a one-night stand.
Yeah.
They did a DNA test.
Yeah.
He took the test after she did.
Yeah.
He didn't do the swab in front of her. It came back negative, but he's definitely the dad. What are the next steps to do?
Well, why does she feel compelled? Is it because she wants to put him on the birth certificate? Is it because she wants to claim child maintenance? It, depending upon what she's looking to achieve, would help me answer the question. I mean, if it's this, well, we can't force a parent to have contact. So even
so the mum,
yeah,
is saying that the child's father isn't the father, but he is.
Oh, I see. But the results have come back negative.
Yeah, but it wasn't done in front of the dad, apparently.
Yeah, but what's mum trying to achieve? She doesn't want him to have contact.
I think so. That's all the information I've got. I've said it.
Oh, okay. Well, if she doesn't want him to have contact, there's nothing she needs to do. If dad's looking for contact, then he needs to make a child arrangements application. If she says that the child, you know, he is the father, then she'll have to deal with that in court if she's got any concerns about letting contact go ahead. But nothing really for her to do. If he wants contact, he has to make the application.
Yeah, that's great.
All right.
I've got another one, if that's all right, Tracy.
Yeah, fine, yeah.
So my husband is claiming he's on universal credit.
Yeah.
And he's suing me in the financial order for spousal maintenance.
Yes.
But in fact, he is working. What would happen in court? I don't have proof apart from the dates he has gone to work and photos of him leaving his home.
Yeah. So again, it all comes down to evidence. But if you are on universal credit, you will be able to afford one lifestyle. If you are working, you can afford another lifestyle. So think outside the box. What is he spending, buying, living, you know, driving around in, wearing? And would he be able to do all of that on universal credit? So there's sort of more ways than one to skin a cat, okay? So you might not need to evidence money in the bank. You might not need to be able to provide pay slips. But if there's something else, also the history, you know, if he has always worked during the relationship and then all of a sudden has lost his job or is on universal credit. I did a video just this morning, actually. Do people hide money during the divorce? Yes, they do. It happens all the time. So if they have a look at that video, that also gives some insight into how we prove this person is actually working. It's just that they don't want to let the court know that they're working.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm getting a lot of comments on giving Judge Judy vibes today, Tracy.
Judge Judy vibes. Well, I thought I'd smarten up because it's been recorded for the podcast, so, you know.
Thanks. Another quick question that says, I currently have social services involved and they are trying to go against me.
Yeah.
My ex was deemed a risk and I have now distanced myself from that person. How can I prove to social services that I have nothing to do with them? As no matter how many times I try to say it, it feels like they don't believe me.
Yeah, it's really...
I want to prove to the judge that I have made the change, but it feels like everyone is against me and no one believes me.
Yeah, it's really difficult. Almost once you've crossed the line with social services, you've got to put the work in, you've got to put the time in. All you can do is tell the truth. It's difficult for me to answer with regard to evidence because I don't know enough about the case. You just keep telling your truth. You just keep saying, look, I haven't seen this person since this date. I want to put the children's interests first. You know, I want to keep my kids. I'm having nothing more to do with them. You want to make sure that, you know, maybe you're not even going to the same pubs or shops or community centres that they go to, and just put the time in. You know, it takes a lot because social services obviously are going to be mindful that, you know, lots of people there are telling them lies. So they're not going to dismiss any concerns they have readily. Put the time in, put the work in. If it's your truth, it will come out in the end.
Okay.
All right.
That's it. Thanks,
fabulous.
Tracy.
Thank you, Captain. I'm going to invite Crystal onto the stage. There we go. Crystal, you're up. What's your question?
Oh, fabulous. I just wanted to get some help on behalf of my brother, if that's okay.
Sure.
So basically, he's been separated from his wife for about a year now.
Yes.
Unfortunately, he had an affair because there was problems at home that drove him to that affair. So his ex-wife yet, but they obviously are going to divorce soon. She's making his life very difficult, being verbally abusive to him.
Yeah.
He's still paying all of the bills while she's still living at the flat that they own together. He's financially crippled from paying all of the bills, and he's just worried. He doesn't really know what to do, whether he to carry on. Obviously, he's got to keep the home for the children, but he's financially crippled.
Yes.
And she's making it hard for him to see the children. He's getting very upset.
Yes.
His mental health is on a thread. He's threatening to leave the country because he's getting very anxious about the whole situation.
Okay, so the first thing, I'm going to jump in if I may, Crystal, because what's missing from this whole situation is a one-off advice for your brother. That's all he needs, okay? At the moment, it almost feels as if he's just having a knee-jerk reaction. You know, she's obviously feeling very aggrieved that he had the affair. She's now making him pay by literally making him pay for all the finances. He's panicking, doesn't quite know what to do. I would suggest to your brother that at the very minimum, he take a one-hour advice, either with me or, you know, another solicitor if he prefers. So at least we can let him know what it is that they are both financially entitled to, okay? Because as hard as the situation may be, it sounds as if the marriage has broken down irretrievably. And when we're dealing with finances, we are not blaming anybody. When we're dealing with divorce, we're not blaming anybody anymore. So I think he needs the advice. This is what she's financially entitled to. This is what you're financially entitled to. He can't keep, you know, paying for everything, even though she feels he's the one that caused the breakdown of the marriage.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot that happened for him to lead up to doing what he did. She's been very verbally abusive to him. She used to chuck things at him.
And if I may jump in again, if he feels, if he feels that he has to justify his actions, he doesn't. He made the decision. It's done. It's all happened. Yeah. If the marriage has irretrievably broken down, he needs to move forward. Okay, it sounds to me as if he's still feeling a little bit guilty, trying to justify what he'd done, and she's still making him feel that guilt. And between the two of them, we're just going round and round in circles. So let him get the advice about from the financial element, and that might assist him in moving away from the relationship as opposed to the country, which is what you said to me earlier.
The thing is that she's being very sort of out of order. She's bringing bills around to him and saying that he's got to pay them. And, you know, he's literally paying for a mortgage. He's paying for everything in that house that she lives in.
And look, she's hurting as well, isn't she? She's angry. Maybe she didn't want this marriage to end. He did what he did, and she hasn't been able to move on yet. So she's looking for revenge. She's hitting him in the pocket. But what I'm saying is this toxicity is going to keep going on and on until eventually he says, okay, I accept that this is what you're entitled to, but this is what I'm entitled to. Let's reach. And if they can't reach an agreement, it might be that he needs to make a court application.
Yeah, I mean, I have said to him that if she doesn't stop being, you know, so ridiculous with her demands, then he's going to have to, because he's feeling quite not desperate, but like he's very tired now of the whole situation. He's admitted that he's done wrong. He's completely accepted it, but she's still being out of order with her actions. You know, she's asking where he's been. She's asking about what he's been doing, calling him a part-time dad.
So Crystal, I get all of that. And we hear this over and over again. He's got two options. He can continue doing what he's doing, i.e. nothing and putting up with it, or he can get some legal advice and draw a line under it. Okay?
Okay, and how do I get him in contact with you then?
So you can just email me, which is tracy@maloneyfamilylaw. Links are in my bio on TikTok, on Instagram. I'm pretty sure my email is in the Discord somewhere.
Thank you.
All right. Failing that, just Google and you'll be able to get in touch with me that way. There'll be an email, a phone number. It's pretty easy. You can send me a DM if you're on Insta.
Okay. Right. Thank you so much for your time. Pleasure. It's the first time I've done this, so I'm a bit, you know, I don't really know what I'm doing. But,
no,
you know.
That's fine. Thanks for sharing, Crystal. I appreciate that. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
FND, I'm going to come to you next whenever you are ready. What's your question?
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
Okay.
A little bit nervous, so just bear with me.
Okay.
I'm calling on behalf of a friend of mine. They are maybe 2 years separated.
Yeah.
Divorce proceedings and financial order peaks and troughs and has reached an absolute standstill. They're due to undertake mediation in the next month. My question is specifically about historical debt. So over the course of the marriage, which is 18, 20-year relationship, 8-year marriage, both him and her have taken on individual debt. Assets were never shared.
Yeah.
Separate bank accounts at his request. For a bit of context, it's quite a emotionally abusive relationship, narcissistic tendencies, coercive control. He took on individual debt in his name for things like cars, home improvements. She takes on individual debt for things like furniture, bedroom furniture for the kids, sofas, beds, that kind of thing. He's earned 5 times her salary. We're in a position now where she cleared those debts long ago. He has never reduced his debt. He's paid the debt every month, but in fact, what he now does, he just top up the loan.
Yeah.
Constantly tops up the loan for different things, for clothes, for holidays. And now he's claiming that that debt is still there and that she is you know, needs to basically give him half as part of the financial settlement.
Yes.
So he's running up his debts whilst liquidating his assets. He sold his Porsche to his girlfriend, apparently so. And we're at a bit of a standstill with this. And so it's the key factor in moving forward.
Yeah, and I think it always comes down to evidence, and I sound like a stuck record because I always say that. But where we have marital debt, it is the responsibility of both of them. Any debt that's acquired after separation clearly isn't marital debt. So I think what the starting point, if she were my client, would be, let's work out and support that by way of statements, credit card statements or loan agreements, what the marital debt was at the point of separation. And then we follow that with further evidence to show the debt that she has paid off. And then we can say to the court, you know, let's use some easy maths. Point of separation, debt was 50,000. You know, my client has paid off 25,000 of that. I know the other side has got 50,000 worth of debt, but actually the other 25 has been accumulated after separation. And you would literally need a document spelling that out. I'd be sending it to the other side and asking them for their comments on the same. And then if the other side weren't in agreement to that, I would be showing that to the court. Now, really, the court can't make an order as to debt. If we have assets in the marriage, it can order that the debt is paid, but only if after the debt is paid, there is then enough for both parties' housing needs and income needs to be satisfied. So you need to start with a little bit of forensic accounting and getting all your ducks in a line, getting all your evidence together to support matrimonial debt and show the difference between that and the debt after separation.
That's great, thanks. So very quickly, if I may, just with regards to evidence as well.
Yep.
There's also an issue regarding pensions, and we feel that he is not disclosing a pension 20 years at the same company.
Yes.
And we are, you know, we're asking, you know, can you provide evidence that there was no pension, no evidence has been forthcoming. There is a pension in place for his current workplace of, you know, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
But we feel that he's disclosing financial information regarding a pension. What would your advice be there, please?
Can I have a couple of his payslips from when he was in that 20-year employment? Because the payslips will show a pension contribution. You know, and if he's trying to conceal a pension, or if he's saying that he never paid into a pension for those 20 years, well, then a couple of his payslips from that job will clarify that. That'll clear that one up.
Yeah, but and that's a perfectly reasonable thing for us to ask, say, over the course of, you know, that's we can ask that over the course of a 20-year employment.
Well, no, I wouldn't go over egging the pudding, like the judge isn't going to let you go on a fishing expedition. I would be saying, look, in the last year of that 20-year employment, could I have 6 sample payslips? You know, could I get February's and April's and August's? And because, again, the court's going to have some proportionality to it. But we just need a sample of his payslips from that 20-year Or if he can't provide that, then a letter from the employer to say that while he was there for 20 years, he never paid into a pension. You know, we are saying, and the court, I think, will support your friend on this, because 20 years is a long time to not pay into a pension if you're now paying into a pension having had a job for 3 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So clearly, yeah, pension exactly, yeah. is something that's important to you. And that length of relationship, she would have known. You know, so I think the court's yeah. going to listen to her request for further disclosure.
Yeah. Okay, thanks so All much right. for that. Pleasure. That's been brilliant.
All right, then. Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Aurea, you are next up whenever you're ready. What's your question?
Yeah, thank Hello. You for talking to me.
Pleasure.
I'm going to try and be as succinct as I can, but there's some important background before I ask the question.
Okay.
In essence, a couple of years ago, my ex-partner and I bought a property together. We have an express declaration of trust and a tiawa, all of which say 50-50.
Yeah.
Over the course of the sale of the property, it became very evident that he does not believe I'm entitled to anything from the house. Yeah. So I submitted an application to the court to support my claim. Now, after I had submitted my application to the court, there appeared a handwritten letter from him. Well, he says I wrote it, that gives up my entire claim to the house.
Yeah.
Now, that was quite a shock, but I immediately said, obviously, I did not write this or sign it and have never seen it before in my life.
Yeah.
We went to a forensic handwriting expert. Both my solicitor and his solicitor jointly collected documents with my handwriting. I sat down with my solicitor and wrote out many, many pages of documentation. And whilst it came back that all of my handwriting on everything we submitted, including all of the stuff from the solicitor's match, she didn't believe that my handwriting was real. The context of that is that I'm dyspraxic, dyslexic, and I have a condition called joint hypermobilia. So it is a bit, I write slightly odd. I've had to work with physiotherapists and occupational therapists to improve it in the later years of my life because it started to cause pain.
What's your question of me? What's your question of me, Aurea?
My question of you is, I tried to collect lots of evidence from my doctors, etc., to try and question this expert.
Why?
And it's been declined in the court.
But hang on a minute, why are you doing any of this?
Oh, because so the letter apparently gives up my entire claim to the house.
And yes, but that, has that letter been sealed by the court? Is it a deed?
No.
Well, then it's not a legally
it's
binding.
It's literally a handwritten document.
It's not a legally binding document. You mentioned in the intro to your question that you had signed a TR1 or that you had a TR1. Yeah. TR1 is to transfer a property into somebody's name. So what is on that document? That's more important.
It was transferred into both of our joint names and joint tenants.
As we stand legally, the Land Registry have it recorded that you both own the property 50-50. You have, in support of that, a declaration of trust that you own it 50-50. And then he submits into evidence, which is weak evidence, by the way, a handwritten letter saying that you signed. My argument for your case would be, if you really wanted to give away your 50%, we would have redone the TR1. We would have transferred your legal and beneficial interest to him by updating the TR1. You guys clearly know what you're doing. You've got all of your documents in order. I would suggest to the court that actually to rely on a handwritten letter is weak. So I wouldn't be getting involved in handwriting experts and, you know, medical evidence. I would simply allow the court to decide. And I appreciate, Aurea, that I am giving you suggestions based on very limited knowledge of your case. But from what you've told me, I would be inviting the court to make a decision based on the evidence that's before it.
Okay. All right. So the expert has already been, accepted by the court.
But the expert says it's not your handwriting.
The expert says my handwriting isn't real in total.
So there we go. So more evidence to suggest that the letter should not be given any weight.
Okay.
If I'm being really honest, all you need is really a really good counsel here, really good barrister, and this won't go any further based on what you've told me. And I appreciate that I only know a little bit. And get yourself really good counsel, and we just put this one to bed. Okay. All right.
Thank you very
much. All the best. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Captain, you had another question for me.
Yeah. So you remember earlier in the call about the DNA test?
Yes.
I've got more info on the question, and I think it might help other people as well.
Was this the one-night stand question?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Because the mum is wanting to be able to do CMS. The dad, she isn't wanting to prove that he's the dad for contact, but she wants to prove he's the dad so she can get other benefits. How can she do that legally in court?
Oh, I see. Okay. So what she's going to have to do is if he completed the DNA test but wasn't, you know, witnessed by anybody, then she's going to have to make an application to the court for DNA testing, that the DNA testing take part in an approved clinic in front of a witness, blah, blah, blah. Where we do testing on site, they have to provide photographic evidence, evidence of who they are. It's all photographed. We know that it's them that's providing the swab sample, etc. And then that will be conclusive proof as to whether he is or he isn't. With that proof, she will then send that to CMS. So her application to the family court is for parentage, essentially, DNA testing, which we call parentage.
And is that done on the C100? And is it a specific issue?
I think it's a C... No, it's going to be a C1, but I'd need to check. If she wants to drop me an email, let me check when I finish this live. It's definitely not the C100. I think it's a C1 for parentage. Or it might be a...
Okay.
Yeah, but I can check for her anyway.
All right, no worries. I'll give you your email address.
Lovely.
And drop you an email. Thanks.
Appreciate that. Thanks, Captain. Bye. Shannon, you are next up. Take yourself off mute. There we go. How can I help?
Hi. So I'm currently pregnant with my new partner.
Yeah.
And I've got two children with my ex.
Yeah.
And we've got married, but I'm still in the house that we bought together.
Yeah.
I've paid the mortgage myself since October last year. He's refused to contribute, so it's solely been me paying the bills.
Yeah.
We've got the kids 50-50, so I'm wanting to move about an hour away. But now he's invited me to mediation.
Yeah.
Stopped me from moving. So could he refuse to sell the house, or stop me from moving? Would he be able to do that?
Well, I mean, if the house is in joint names, you're going to need his signature to be able to sell it. So could he stop you from selling the house? Yes, he could, because he can just refuse to sign the documents. And then you'd have to get an order that says that the house will be sold. Could he stop you from moving an hour away? You don't need his permission to move. But what he could do, because obviously you're a fully grown adult and can live where you want to, but what he could do is get a prohibited steps order from the court, which would stop the children from going with you. So in order to win a case like that, you have to show that your move isn't going to impact upon his existing contact. That's key. Because what the court, the starting point in all of this is that the children are now used to 50-50. The status quo, their routine is 50-50. So the strength in your case will lie in, if I move an hour away, that will not be impacted. Now, chances are it is going to be impacted because an hour is a fair distance away. So then you may have to negotiate with him either an alternative 50-50 or another remedy. You know, it might be that he gets less contact. Now, he's not going to agree to that by the sounds of it. So then you're in a full-blown child arrangements, you know, variation order. And you have to stress how it's in the children's best interest to be with you and move away with you.
Right, okay.
That's where you need the advice, Shannon, I would suggest.
Right, okay. That's fine then. That's all I wanted to ask. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Shannon. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Okay, guys, well, look, we have come to the end of our hour in any event, but don't worry, I'm back again on Friday for another live Discord session, 12:30 till 1:30. Just for those of you that maybe want to hear that again, or you found that was useful, know that this goes out on my YouTube channel, Tea with the Queen, at 6:00 on a Monday. And it will also go up on the podcast at 6 o'clock on a Monday. So by all means, check those out if you found any of that information useful. Until then, guys, I will sign off. Take care to all of you. See you again or hear you again Friday at 12:30. Okay, thanks. Bye.
So there we go, another live Discord show. I hope you guys enjoyed that. And remember, if you want to join me on my live Discord show, then by all means do so. Wednesdays and Fridays, 12:30 to 1:30. You can come into the Legal Queen Lounge, put your hand up, and I'll invite you on the stage to ask me your question.